Good evening. I'm Brian Lawrence, and we are starting our week-long series of chats with composers of this year's Oscar-nominated film scores. And first up is John Williams, who picks up the musical thread he started 42 years ago in Raiders of the Lost Ark. The film is Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, in which our hero searches for a time machine invented by the ancient Greek mathematician Archimedes. And it is the 54th Oscar nomination for John Williams. This is a wonderful opportunity to revisit music in the score for Indiana Jones. And this is also, I'm reminded of a year ago when there was all this talk about Fablemans was the last score and then famously wasn't. What did you make of all of the coverage of that moment? And this is the film that sort of started it all.
Well, I must have said at some time somewhere that Fablemans was going to be my last film. I'm not sure why I said that. I think I got a little help from the COVID period where it was possible to think that I wouldn't be doing any more films. But of course, with Steven, it would be very, very hard ever to say no. He's a wonderful man, has many great qualities. One thing he is not is somebody you can say no to.
Indeed.
Indiana Jones, actually I'm very grateful to Jim Mangold and our producer Kathy Kennedy, who both of them gave me the opportunity to do it or not do it. I looked at the film and I thought I would write the main thematic material, and I wrote three pieces actually for orchestra, which we recorded. A piece for the Archimedes antiquity tinted, put it that way, areas of the film. Mm-hmm. And a lot of new Nazi music, slow, fast, loud, and soft, and Helena's theme. And then, as I was looking at the film, I began to be nostalgic, first of all, having done four of them. I love Harrison. I've done a few films with Harrison, Star Wars being the beginning of it, I think. And I loved him in the film, and I particularly loved Phoebe Waller-Bridge. Mm-hmm. Then I became very jealous about the idea of anybody else doing the music.
Yes.
I thought, oh dear, I need to accomplish this, and I need to be part of that duo. I love them together and wanted to write the music. So I began to do it, and it was enormously pleasurable for me.
Talk about nostalgia, being nostalgic for this film and for Harrison Ford and for this music, I imagine, as well. And you've had these opportunities to live with characters across multiple film scores in a couple of different franchises, obviously, and see these characters introduced to new characters over time and watch the ways that the characters interact. I'm interested in what that process is like for you to then create music that underscores this long arc with all of its twists and turns.
I think it's probably true to state that these actors are a very big part of the inspiration, I think, that people draw from films. A lot of things move us emotionally and hopefully musically when that's the right thing. Mm-hmm. Harrison is certainly one of those people. He's been fun on and off the screen all these years. He's even said to me that he got sick of Indiana Jones music. Huh. He said, because every time he appears on stage, they play the music. He said, there's my music all the time. And he said, when I went in to have a colonoscopy, before they put me to sleep, they played my music. And he said,
no.
He said, it irritated me. But then he sort of apologized later. But I thought that was adorable, actually.
Absolutely. Well, I can't think of any music that would really make that moment any better, so.
Oh, cool, thank you.
There's There's a word that I keep seeing when I read reviews or articles about the score in particular, and that word is swashbuckling. As someone who loves the scores of Eric Wolfgang Korngold as much as you do, I wonder, how does it feel to see that word next to your name and your music?
Yes.
Swashbuckling.
I don't know the origin of the word, but it's a delicious word.
And is it accurate to this score? I mean, to me, it feels accurate.
Well, I guess it's in a long theatrical and film tradition of handling with a swagger adventure scenes that are particularly, put it this way, not really taken so seriously. I think about Korngold, as you mentioned, his swashbuckling scenes. Are we talking about Errol Flynn? We probably are. Mm-hmm. And Errol Flynn had a quality that Harrison has, that when he's in, when either one of them are in jeopardy scenes and in difficult situations, there's a slight tongue-in-cheek, a slight sense of humor, a slight ability not to take this thing, which is meant to be entertainment, too seriously. You wouldn't take a gunfight in World War II and call it swashbuckling. Mm. There's nothing but very serious aspects to the whole thing. So I think Korngold understood this. It is, as you said, a very interesting word. And when you think about it and try to define it, it is something unique. And Errol Flynn and Harrison and a few others were able to accomplish this with very deft performances.
But the music makes it even more so, right? I mean,
I think so. Yes. I would take one quick swing at it. It's generally probably going to be tonal. By that I mean a certain amount of restriction and the dissonant harmonies and notes that may clash against each other. I mean, Korngold, I don't know if they're close to Beethoven's scherzos or not, but the modalities, the musical modalities are lighthearted to some degree. And I think that's part of what's it, basically musically, the reason why it has that quality. A very serious fight or a very serious chase is going to be adopting different modalities in the music, different structures in the orchestration, and so on.
You mentioned adoring the work of Phoebe Waller-Bridge, and I'm thinking of Helena's theme, and you said that's one of the first pieces that you wrote as you were contemplating writing this score. Where did you find the inspiration for Helena's theme?
Well, directly from Phoebe, really. Jim Mangold said to me, write a theme for Phoebe, or Helena is her name. That's in the mode of the 1940s siren movie stars. I love that suggestion. What I found with Phoebe's character, she smoked and she drank and she gambled and she had adventures. She was always beautiful in a sort of very seductive, don't touch me way. And Phoebe had all that quality and also a little tongue-in-cheek humor, again, matching Harrison's throughout the film. So I have to say Phoebe and the writing and the filming by Jim or all the inspiration I needed. I remembered pieces like Laura from David Raxon, similar qualities that might produce a kind of an aspect of their characters difficult to define, a little bit obscure, giving you a sense that there's a lot in their background that we don't know and we're not going to know, but we sense there's complexity there.
Let's talk Tuk Tuk. You've given us so much amazing chase scene music over the years in this franchise, in that other franchise, in E.T. One of my favorites is in the Sugarland Express.
Oh.
What makes for good chase scene music? How do you do it?
The basic ingredient, of course, is energy, which translates into rhythmic expression. You know, how fast are we going to go? How loud will we be? One of the things interesting in my mind in that is that there's a certain, if you look at an action sequence in a film without any music, there's a certain tempo that is in the editing, if it's good editing and good shooting, tempo that you can sense and feel. If you get ahead of that tempo, it makes the actions, the horse riding and the scene seem slow. If you get behind it, the music is dragging the scene down and pulling it back. There's a moment where I don't ride horses, but I use the analogy anyway of saying riding a horse and galloping. An expert rider gets to a point at a certain speed where he doesn't feel it. He's so in sync with the horse and its motions as they affect his own position on the horse. Something like that has to do with the kind of energy that we have to produce and measure. And of course, there's a lot of details in the orchestration and the materials themselves that will do that. But I think the simplest answer to you, Brian, is that it's energy created by the rhythms employed in the music.
And you said you find that tempo from the visuals.
That's the best way to approach it. You can try various tempos, or tempi, as we say. It's very interesting with me and Steven, we've done a lot of action things together. We usually arrive at the same point. That's wonderful.
Yes.
I can also say in that same breath, Steven is fabulous to work with because he does love music. You can fill his films up with music and he will always want more, which is a wonderful co-worker for a composer to have.
Just one other question I had about the tuk-tuk in particular is, here is this three-wheeled vehicle in the middle of a chase with cars and motorcycles and other things, and it's this vehicle that's so unstable because you're really driving a triangle and the back wheels lift off and it could tip over at any moment or go rolling down the hill, and they're going through these really disjointed, narrow streets. You know, it occurred to me that you're having to score this particular scene with a real sense of instability within the forward motion. How did you find that instability that was represented both in the shape of the streets and also the vehicle itself?
A sense of unbalance, I guess.
Yeah.
You have a wonderful thought there. It actually hadn't occurred to me that the stability of a Mercedes against that little thing, there was a tremendous variation there. Frankly, I hadn't thought of it. I didn't treat it as a different creature from, was it a Mercedes that they were chasing? A very stable and strong car. But that's a fabulous idea. I'll take that as a challenge, Brian. see what I could, how I would differentiate between a four-wheeled vehicle and the three-wheeled vehicle. There may be a musical difference that I didn't catch, but thanks for the idea.
Oh my gosh. Well, have fun with it, because I know you'll find the answer.
Maybe so.
We'll be right back. I did notice that you included Anne-Sophie Mutter's performance of Helena's theme on the soundtrack, and I thought that was really wonderful to hear that version as well. So I don't have a question, it's just a thank you for that. I'm glad it's there.
Oh, thanks very much. I am too. I've been working a lot with Anne-Sophie the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
I arranged it for her. She wanted to play it in concert. We have done it together a number of times. And then the idea occurred that it would be nice and fun to, even though it's not on the soundtrack or in the film,
yeah,
a musical treat, I hoped. She plays it very beautifully. We were allowed to do that, and we had a lot of fun doing it. And now we have the piece for orchestra,
yeah,
as well as a piece for violin and orchestra.
Zooming out just a bit, we're of course noticing fewer orchestras in film scores, and I wonder, does that give you pause at all? Do you worry about there being fewer orchestras in film scores, or is that just the natural evolution of the industry?
I think it's right to say it's a natural evolution of taste and industry and the closeness of pop music with stylistic aspirations, I guess, of younger people. But direct to your answer about, am I worried about it? No, I think the orchestra is a particularly magical instrument created over several centuries. There's nothing like it, and I think it will always have a place. I think what we're going to have, and I wish I could live another 50 or 100 years to see it all, or hear it all, is an amalgam of symbiotic development with the orchestra enhanced by electronics and other sound sources, mm-hmm, that can be combined. It's happening now. Some of it's very exciting. Beautiful things that Tommy Newman does, for example. It's a mixture of orchestra and his own electronic work, which is very fine, it's very elegant, and it's very expressive. So I think the orchestra is going to be around. Think of the violin that's been around 300 or 400 years. I don't want to think that Stradivarius is going anywhere.
That is fair. I guess the premise of that question comes from the fact that I had the extreme honor of giving the pre-concert talks at the LA Phil for the program that you curated.
Oh, good.
And every time I asked the audience, is there anyone here attending this orchestra in this place for the very first time? And there were so many hands, mm-hmm, that would go up. Mm-hmm. Then I would ask, is this anyone's first time hearing an orchestra live anywhere? And many hands shot up. And it occurred to me that most people hear an orchestra for the first time in a movie theater.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's been a wonderful meeting of the souls, really, with this whole thing. Bernard Herrmann used to say, as you probably know this, there's no such thing as a silent film. In the silence, we had to have a little orchestra or an organ or something like that. So film has helped to disseminate music all around the world. It's a wonderful thing.